Prepare yourself. It's Big News Wednesday. Not just Big News Wednesday with JR Jackson. JR, very glad to have you here. Thank you.
What's going on, John? How you feeling? How you feeling today?
No, I'm good. I'm glad to have you here. I know that you're rested, fresh, and raring to go because you had at least like a 4 minute break, right?
Since well, yeah, and also I slept an entirety of 5 hours too. That's like record breaking for me, bro.
Yeah, that's not bad actually. I like it. Yeah. Thank you, Spectrophonic. I see you. So today is Big News Wednesday. That's true. They all are. But it's also big potential breaking news Wednesday because we'll talk about it in a little bit. I don't know if the press conference is going to happen, but let's just say that Herschel Walker might not, in fact, have encouraged one woman to have an abortion. It turns out that that might not be true.
So what you're saying is zero, because right?
You might think so. It turns out there's another option beyond one or zero. So anyway, we're gonna talk about that big news that'll have no effect whatsoever on anything.
Right.
And that'll be coming up soon. But anyway, we got a lot more to talk about. I hear there was a debate in Pennsylvania. I don't know anything about it, but we're gonna look into it and see what we can figure out. Let's see. The legal advice that Trump is being given. So we have two versions that we're gonna talk about. The one that's happening on TV and the one that's happening behind the scenes. There's a bit of a gap between those two things too, and I find it hilarious. Marjorie Greene has been swatted, which is no laughing matter. We're gonna talk about that too. And then in the aftermath, if you're watching the full show, Dave Leventhal, one of the biggest friends of the show, will be joining us to break down how politicians' financial disclosures can reveal incredibly personal information about them that they may not know that they're revealing. So that's gonna be spicy and fascinating as well. Oh, also Ben Shapiro, complete hack, will reveal the most recent evidence of that to close out our show. But in advance of all of that, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing the stream, that'd be great. And if you wanna send us any comments, tweets, or super chats, we will respond as we go. But with all that said, and me having half of an eye on Twitter to see when this press conference begins, JR, are you ready to start the show?
I'm ready for the press conference.
Okay.
But we'll do this.
In that case, let's just wait. And I'll refresh and refresh. No, we're going to talk about some news and we'll eventually get to it. So why don't we start off with this? Last night was the big John Fetterman, Dr. Oz debate for the Senate race in Pennsylvania. And didn't go exactly as Fetterman or his supporters might have wanted, but Dr. Oz also made a number of significant stumbles. So we're gonna dive into all of that. But first, we all knew that John Fetterman, still in recovery from his stroke, was going to have some difficulty, and he attempted to prepare us for that right off the bat. Here he is.
And let's also talk about the elephant in the room. I had a stroke. He's never let me forget that. And I might miss some words during this debate, mush two words together, but it knocked me down, but I'm gonna keep coming back up. And this campaign is all about, to me, is about fighting for everyone in Pennsylvania that ever got knocked down, that needs to get back up.
Okay, so that is him attempting to explain his health situation as well as manage expectations. And you can probably hear even in that he was having a little bit of trouble at times. Now, there were periods that were a lot worse where he was having difficulty expressing his thoughts or slightly changing words from perhaps what he intended to say. But he laid out there what everybody already knows. He had a stroke just a few months ago. He has auditory processing issues. His brain functions. He has no cognitive deficits, but he has difficulty in hearing and sometimes speaking. So turning thoughts into words. And of course, that is going to be turned into something far more nefarious. Now, Dr. Oz on stage is gonna mostly try to pretend that he hasn't been a complete a-hole throughout this campaign. He's not going to like actually to Fetterman's face mock him or question his cognitive abilities. That's for campaign ads and surrogates and all that. But the surrogates were doing that literally as the debate was going on. Stephen Miller, one of the most grotesque snake human hybrids operating on Earth right now, tweeted in advance of the debate, "Get ready to watch Fetterman deliver a performance for the ages. As the first ever Senate candidate to receive clandestine video messages during the entirety of the debate, crime fetishist Fetterman should be expected to display nothing short of rhetorical genius. And he goes on to say that anything less than a 10 out of 10 from John Fetterman is a giant fail. Now, what you need to understand about that is he doesn't believe any of that or mean any of that. He, like most people talking about politics on Twitter, has no respect whatsoever for the people who follow him. And I really want to focus on that. I don't mean that he doesn't respect like lefties like me. I don't care what he says, and he doesn't care what I care what he says. He doesn't have respect for the people who follow him, who look up to him for some reason that I'll never understand. He doesn't believe that John Fetterman pre-stroke was known for being a good debater. He doesn't believe that he was receiving secret video messages or anything like that. He just doesn't care about any of this. Now, to be clear, a source familiar with negotiations behind the debate say that Fetterman wanted journalists in the debate room to independently see exactly how the closed captioning system worked in real time, so they would know that he was not receiving any secret messages or whatever other nonsense Fox is spreading. They were not allowed to do that, though, because Dr. Oz's team blocked the request. Now, why that in the end was up to Dr. Oz's team, I don't know, but I do know why they blocked it, so that people like Stephen Miller and others, probably Tucker Carlson tonight, will be able to spread their conspiracy theories. Rather than having actual transparency, having journalists in the room, they decided no, that would clarify things in a way that makes it more difficult for us to spread our BS narrative. So no, we're gonna block the journalists and then let the internet do what the internet does. JR, what do you think?
Well, if I believe that if I truly believe that my opponent was having issues with this whole thing, or if I truly believed all the video stuff that, you know, people like, what's that idiot's name? Stephen Miller was saying that all this is gonna happen and look how horrible he looks and all this. Without it even being exhibited at the actual debate, before that happens, I would want journalists in the room. I would want them to see it. You know, we talk about all the time how, you know, they're covering up for these libs. How about some exposure? Why not some transparency? That's what we want, right? So if it gets out that then Dr. Oz wants to block journalists from doing their jobs of showing how badly John Fetterman would have to perform at this because of his the results of his stroke or the recovery he's going through, I would want that there. If I don't want it there, that would indicate that I don't believe any of this BS that I keep talking about. I'm just trying to convince you to think it, and I have to make sure that you have limited amount of information to either confirm or refute the statements that I make.
Yeah.
That should be an indictment on me.
You know, like looking at the way that people have responded to this, first of all, like as we've said, did he have difficulty expressing himself? Yes, he obviously did. Mm-hmm. Is it potentially even worse than I might have thought it would have been, considering that I've seen him speak recently and he had more capacity, you know, in the recent past? Yes. But it makes me wonder, what if, this is a crazy hypothetical, it could never actually happen, but let's think about it. What if a person ran for office that couldn't speak at all? Would everyone in media just declare, well, obviously they can't be a senator. I mean, they can't speak. Now, Fetterman, of course, can speak. He has what? 30% more difficulty than a random person for, I don't know, maybe you think it's 40 or 50, I don't know. But he has far more capacity. But they seemingly believe that if you have trouble hearing, if you have trouble speaking, then really suspect. I mean, we're not gonna come out and say that it's disqualifying, but we're really gonna talk about it a lot. And we're gonna make it so that you can't help but think that this race should be determined by that. Not about the policies, whether Fetterman's or Oz's, but about whether he'll be able to give like a rousing bit of oration or something. That's what they're doing. That's actively what they're doing. Will it work? I don't know. Maybe a bunch of people will turn against him and support MAGA because Fetterman stumbled in his speech. I don't know. I know that Fetterman raised $1 million in the 3 hours after the debate. That doesn't necessarily mean much. I mean, his supporters presumably are giving him the money. We don't know that they're new supporters, but this is obviously a thing that Oz loves. They want the race to be determined on this. They wanted, by the way, they wanted 7 debates with Fetterman. And honestly, in most races, I would have been fine with that. Now, of course, bear in mind, if Fetterman hadn't had the stroke, there's no way in hell that Dr. Oz would have wanted the 7 debates. This is all about trying to press what they see as a weakness for Fetterman. But I'll also remind you that the point of a debate is communication. It doesn't have to be vocal communication, but you're supposed to learn about the candidates. And as much trouble as Fetterman might have had in literally turning his thoughts into speech, Think about Dr. Oz, who can speak. He's TV, he's a slick, polished TV personality. But he also had a lot of trouble turning his thoughts into speech. Because when he was asked if he would support a Trump 2024 run, he initially wouldn't say. Now notice, he could say, he can speak, he doesn't have those trouble. But he didn't want to say. Now he eventually said, I'll support whoever the Republican Party puts up, as if he wasn't joined at the hip with Donald Trump like 4 months ago. Okay, and as we're gonna get to when it comes to abortion, he can speak, but he doesn't want to speak about his positions on this. And I would argue that that's much worse. A guy telling the truth but stumbling along the way, I am always gonna back over someone who could speak for hours at a time and tell you literally nothing about what they're gonna do if they get into power.
It's the conversation about, yeah, it's the conversation about principles and policies versus just trying to politic. Let's keep it real. So yeah, and we know the first level of politicians is to not give much substance, just try and paint a picture and make sure that you vote for them. So just really fast, just as far as their principles and policies, because look, they're saying John Fetterman is unable to serve because of the recovery from the stroke, right? So as I think many people have mentioned, everyone knows someone that's maybe had a stroke, or at least you're close enough to it that you've seen this. I have directly in my family, I've seen it. So if you say that he can't do the job, cool, you can say that. You can claim that and consider that maybe he can't do the job. What does that do with other folks? What's your thoughts on other folks? What's the Republican Party's approach to people who have chronic pain, or maybe are disabilities, or maybe fell into these things maybe because of health problems? Similarly to John Fetterman, what do they say about them in work? Do you guys know about it? Because it's a lot of times we talk about like safety nets, healthcare systems, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. What we tell them is shut up and get your ass back to work. We don't care that they need to be home longer. We don't care that they said, hey, I can't do the job of the same nature because of this health problem I've got. This whole thing, you know, the cancer. When those things happen, we go, shut up and get back to work. Look at you lazy freeloaders trying to take money and healthcare from anyone and everyone else. We treat them like garbage. That's the approach to people with health issues and working in the country, unless it's John Fetterman. Then suddenly it's hey, he can't ever do anything ever again in his life. Should he go home and start feeding off the system and taking money? Exactly. I don't think they want that.
Sort of doubt they actually believe that. Sort of doubt that they care.
Sorry, it was a long tangent, but still.
That's okay. But like the messages attacking him, I hate, obviously. The message is pretending that they're just concerned for him and they want him to focus on his recovery. And it's really mean that people like his wife would be pushing him to run and they just want him to get better. I just want to set the world on fire with my mind like a Stephen King character. Anyway, with that said, Why don't we move on to the substance, since no one else will? Let's go into this first side.
There should not be involvement from the federal government in how states decide their abortion decisions. As a physician, I've been in the room when there's some difficult conversations happening. I don't want the federal government involved with that at all. I want women, doctors, local political leaders, letting the democracy that's always allowed our nation to thrive to put the best ideas forward so states can decide for themselves.
That was really a perfect Dr. Oz response at last night's debate. It was half a lie, and the other half, where he was being kind of honest, was awful. So we'll return to whether he wants the federal government kept out of this. And he doesn't want us to return, as you'll see. But let's focus on, it should be up to you and your doctor and local political leaders, like the city councilman, comptroller, county dog catcher, exactly which local political leaders should be determining what happens in your uterus? How much access should, like, I don't know, the county bursar or something have in your fallopian tubes? He thought that that was a winning line. That, yes, okay, I get it, I'm giving control over your body to politicians, but it's local. And isn't that what old school democracy is about? Local neighborhood decisions over your body and your future, determining whether you have to bring new life into the world. They really saw that as a win. JR, I hope that the Fetterman campaign takes that, clips it out, and just plasters it over the state. It won't bother Oz too much because he won't see it, he won't be there. But I think it should be everywhere across Pennsylvania.
I do think I'm seeing it a little bit. I mean, you're seeing more social media, but again, directly in Pennsylvania, yeah. And even if Fetterman's camp doesn't do this, everyone's noticing that stark line there. Your local politicians, so they're the ones in the room. Again, bro, I'd say this all the time when you know you get the pundits on TV saying stuff, and you go, "Oh my God, I can't believe he said that. This was planned. This was not like an off the cuff remark. This wasn't a gaffe." This is what they wanted him to say, which was the local politicians should be involved in your pregnancies. And we've seen over and over again, as we've gone through this whole Roe versus Wade debate ever since the thing was first leaked, that what they're going to do is local politicians proving, not even local ones, national politicians, all of them that are against women's rights over their own body, proving that they have no idea how any of this works, but they should be involved in decision making after we've seen in stark terms. They're clueless as to how any of this works or reasons why many women have to make these types of decisions.
Yeah. Yeah. So that look, that's just such a terrible part of that answer. And obviously Fetterman wants you to have control of your body. But I do want to focus on the other part of it because he also lied there. The truths that he told were terrible, but the lies I think were worse because he said, "I want it to be up to local politicians. It's not for the federal government to do that." But does he actually believe that? Because three times he was asked whether he would support a federal ban on abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy. That's the Lindsey Graham model that they're almost certainly going to vote on if they take control of the Senate. Three times he declined to give a straight answer. And I got to say, ladies and gentlemen, we got him. Not on the substance. Senate campaigns are not supposed to be about the substance. Don't determine your vote based on the substance. That's aside. But if somebody has trouble communicating an answer, if they can't say what they think, well, then that's what you should vote based on. And so forget about the fact that he totally would vote for that. Or if it was 14 weeks or 11 weeks or 6 minutes, doesn't matter. Whatever they put forward, he's going to support. He refused to actually say. Now, if he wouldn't support it, he'd be happy to say that because that would be a popular position to take. And politicians notably like saying popular things. The fact that he wouldn't answer it is actually an answer. We know exactly what his position on that is. Fetterman says, "If you believe that the choice of your reproductive freedom belongs with Dr. Oz, then you have a choice." Promising that he would vote to codify abortion protections in a law, saying, "If you believe that the choice for abortion belongs between you and your doctor, that's what I fight for." Now that's a good answer on the substance, which is obviously irrelevant. But you'll notice that it was also a full sentence. And so now we can support Fetterman again because he can put together a full sentence. Doesn't matter about what. We can support him and we can oppose Dr. Oz. Doesn't matter about what. He didn't answer. And that's all that matters in American politics.
Weird how that works, though, right? Also, by the way, I spoke about this earlier on my show. What is it about the job? Tell me specifically, because if you're right about something, and I don't have the answer because I've never been a senator before. So if you, what is it about the job? Will he not be able to do because of what you saw last night? What is it about? Is it about being able to debate? Maybe they're thinking he can't figure out what is being said. When actually, if you talk to doctors, they'll tell you he can figure what's being said. It's the communication. It's going from the brain to then speaking it or even taking it in to that point. So would that be the problem there? Number one. Number two, is the potential for him to get even better? Because people recover. That's what we call it, a recovery. Yeah. Will he be able to get better from that point? And because of the communication issue, is that an absolute a strike three? We're done, can't handle this because he's going to destroy the United States Senate because of it. There's one Herschel Walker that's running for Senate down in Georgia. Do you understand anything the hell this guy says? Does he make any sense? Does he lie constantly? And while he's lying, does he tell little anecdotal stories that make absolutely no sense? So if we're talking about communication and being able to do the job, what part about this job, this liar down in Georgia, have to do what's part of his skill sets that you're having to ignore to think he should be in this position versus John Fetterman? What is it about the job? Just ask yourself that when you make these decisions.
100%. Let's jump to this next one. It's a fun one.
He keeps talking about Bernie Sanders. Three years ago, he was on his show and he hugged him and he said, "I love this guy." You know what? Why don't you pretend that you live in Vermont instead of Pennsylvania and run against Bernie Sanders? Because all you can do is talk about Bernie Sanders, because my truth is that healthcare is a basic fundamental right. And I believe in expanding that. And I believe about supporting, fighting for healthcare, the kind of healthcare that saved my life.
Well, hold up, Fetterman. There are still future elections. Dr. Oz might well want to run against him and head over there. Maybe he'll go up against Sinema or something someday. I don't know. He lives wherever he needs to. But I love that response because it isn't just about the fact that Dr. Oz is trying to make this election for some reason about Bernie Sanders, while also dodging the fact that he's super close with Donald Trump. It's that Dr. Oz is an absolutely massive liar who has completely flip-flopped from the person he presented himself to be for years and years on his show. And I don't just mean about his position on Donald Trump or the fact that he apparently was a big fan of Bernie Sanders 3 years ago. That was like years after Bernie Sanders ran for president. So he knew exactly who Bernie Sanders was. He's flip-flopped on all sorts of things. He flip-flopped on vaccines. We're gonna get to. He flip-flopped on alternative medicine for COVID. He flip-flopped on abortion. He was a certain person before, and then he decided, I would very much like to be a Republican senator. And so he crafted an entirely new persona for him that has no relationship to anything approaching a value system, principles, anything like that. And we're gonna get to some of the damage that this hypocrisy has done, but I wanted to give you a chance, Chair, to jump in.
The lies that get told, again, you have to base it off of, again, what these folks may do or say. Again, you said he decided to run for Senate as a Republican. I feel like if he saw the opportunity, he would have run for the Senate as a Democrat too. These types of folks that are drawn to these types of this many times, these types of politicians that look this way as they run, the whole basis is just to get in. Just get in. Who cares? And the reasons why the supporters of it are okay with it is because we just need another number. We saw it after the whole thing started blowing up with Herschel Walker yet again. Who cares? We just need another body there. A breathing human that's gonna stand there and do what we tell him to do. There you have Dr. Oz.
Yeah, 100%. Well, let's see how his willingness to just say whatever he needs to in the moment that he thinks will make him popular or get him money can actually affect people. Let's jump into why he's famous. What has he been doing for all those years on TV? Let's take a look at this.
Did you or your company make a profit from promoting those products? You have 30 seconds.
I never sold weight loss products as described in those commercials. It's a television show, like this is a television show. So people can run commercials on the shows, and that's a perfectly appropriate and very transparent process. I ruffled a lot of feathers on my show because I told people the truth, and I'm proud of that. I'll do the exact same thing as a US senator.
Now, see, that was a very slick response. He just kept talking and it was super smooth and it was a complete set of nasty, nasty lies. But it was smoothly delivered. The fact that he for many years pushed whatever berry or twig or whatever was popular that supposedly will allow people to drop 60 pounds in a month without any exercise. Don't focus on that. Focus on the fact that he ruffled feathers. Don't focus on the specific claims of a complete abdication of any ethical responsibilities he has as a doctor. Focus on vague stuff, like the fact that he ruffled feathers or something. No, he lied to people about berries and about shakes and about pills and all that stuff. And not in all those cases did he necessarily make any direct money from the sale of those pills. But that's hardly the only way one can profit. If he gets people to watch his show for years by promising them these miraculous results, and they watch his show, he gets paid for that. He doesn't have to get paid directly for the pills. And one would argue, I think, quite fairly, that if you're getting people to take these things and they're not getting better, in fact, they're avoiding potentially really going to a doctor or really starting to exercise, then the damage is just as real whether you directly profited per pill or not. But it went beyond just the advertisements. He on his show warned parents that apple juice contained unsafe levels of arsenic, which the FDA called irresponsible and misleading, obviously. In 2013, he warned women that carrying cell phones in their bras could cause breast cancer. That's not based on anything. I don't know, maybe a 4chan post, who knows? In 2014, the British Medical Journal analyzed 80 recommendations from his show and concluded that fewer than half were supported by evidence. And that most significantly went beyond just fruit-based juices into things like promoting chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine in more than 25 different appearances over just 2 months in the early stages of the pandemic. Now, he eventually stopped that once it showed that people who took these treatments were actually more likely to die from COVID than those who didn't, but he used it as an opportunity to get on TV, to sell his books and get people to watch his stuff. He was willing to give people advice that he had no idea whether it was accurate or not, using the guise of being a doctor, as effectively, it's the same. He would put a stethoscope around his neck in the same way that Herschel Walker would hold up a fake badge. It meant nothing to them, but it gives like sort of an aura of like authority or responsibility or something, JR. And that is very much a thing that should influence someone's choice of who to vote for in this race.
Very quickly, very simply, this is the thing. If there's somebody who shows their backgrounds, why do we talk about people's backgrounds so much in politics? It's because you maybe want to get an insight on who they are and how they approach situations. Maybe their moral compass, maybe what they might do in the future. Because there's always, and it happens with both parties, both major parties. You may elect someone and go, damn it, that guy's nothing like what I thought. He doesn't follow any of the policies I want. Conservatives complain about this just like Democrats do. So they didn't do any of the policies doing. He fooled us. He tricked us. He said the things that we want to hear. Then he did the opposite. Some people were worried about that when it came to Dr. Oz earlier on. They're like, he's a Democrat, right? In the primaries. But now it's all on board. So if we're looking to people's past and the fact that he had this litany of things that he was willing to lie about for money and influence and more power and recognition, why wouldn't he do the same in office? That's the reason why we talk about this stuff.
Yeah, look, we know that virtually every politician is going to have a tenuous like a relationship with the truth. Why would you choose someone whose career was made on lying, like very specifically? And I get that that's in vogue. I mean, they did, after all, choose Trump in 2016, but I think there might be a better way.
Not lying would get you kicked out of the party. That's exactly. And I'm not exaggerating.
Yeah. Trump was complaining to Blake Masters that he didn't tell enough big lies in his debate. Okay, let's talk about one more thing really fast. Let's jump to this last video and we'll talk briefly about it.
What I'm saying is he is 6% ahead, okay?
Single digits.
Single digits. Why? Because everybody's focusing on the personal attack. People aren't focusing on the issues that matter to the voters.
With your percentages, because I want people to really understand. So last hour we looked at several polls. We do the politics average on that. Mm-hmm. Fetterman's up by 1 percentage point. Mm-hmm. And CBS News Battleground Tracker poll, Pennsylvania Senate contest narrows. This is just from a few hours ago. The most recent polling has them at barely 2, just under 2. And that Fetterman was up by 5 points last month. So yeah, I don't see 6 anywhere. I know you can find an outlier, but that gets averaged in and it's 2% or under. It is squeaky tight, Leslie.
That is Harris Faulkner. She's one of the straight news people over on Fox. She's not there to just give you conservative ideology. She's there to call balls and strikes. And she had an issue with the first woman who talked about this 6-point lead of Fetterman. She was not going to let that stand. Where the hell did you find that? I don't see that literally anywhere. Well, look, I don't know. Maybe the first woman does her research somewhere else. Maybe she saw it, for instance, on that program just a few minutes earlier, because that's where the result came from. On that show, they put up what I'm going to say is a 30-foot long graphic of Fetterman up 6 points over Oz. And apparently, the first woman is the only one paying attention to that, I guess. Now, look, the issue with this isn't that Harris Faulkner's overall point isn't accurate. The aggregate of all of the polls does have them being close. But if you look at this, you'll see that overall, yes, close and closer than it was. But literally every one of these polls is either tied or Fetterman is up. So I think it's acceptable to point out that Fetterman is leading. And it was the condescending nature of it. She held up her finger and said, now, I just want to make sure that people understand. I don't know where you got this outlier. It was CNN. It was presented on your show, which you apparently don't watch. Literally, as you're sitting on the couch, you don't watch the show. So I don't know, just don't present it as such a like she is supposed to just be a journalist, a neutral arbiter of the truth. That's what they would say. I think that's BS. I don't think it actually exists. But when you present the information in that way, that condescending, smug tone, that it's ridiculous to think he could be up by 6, that is not being a neutral arbiter. That is opining while still trying to maintain the idea that she is above all of these mere pundits. She floats above them. She's not weighed down by ideology or anything like that. And it just isn't the case in case after case.
By the way, that huge 30-foot screen, I would love to play some NBA 2K23 on that. That one looks great. Cool. We'll hook that up later. But also, when it comes to this, the condescending nature, it's the reason behind that energy that Harris Faulkner wanted to push was to make sure anyone else, if you have any kind of an original thought, maybe you see something that doesn't make sense in the propaganda that they're pushing, it kind of pushes back on you to be like, maybe I shouldn't say it, because that last lady got her head kind of bitten off trying to state some reality that we just saw. Which thing should I say that doesn't match up? Okay, the programming doesn't like that point, so I won't make that point. And this is just a normal conversation. If you come to someone so aggressively, you're hoping everyone else is put on notice. We're not going to take any of this truth telling around here. This is not what we do. In fact, I'm going to say, where the hell did you get that from? And you can't say, your show.
Yeah.
You can't.
9 minutes earlier. Exactly. It's so endlessly condescending. And the point of the show is not to make sure that people watching it know what's really going on, which is fairly that it's a close race. Kayleigh McEnany kept responding to her saying it was 6 points, was saying it does single digits. It's to reassure the audience. The hosts, all five of them together, they take the viewer through the TV. And they hold them and they stroke their head and they tell them that nothing bad will ever happen. And if something bad does happen, it didn't really happen. It was rigged and it was stolen and you're great and every one of your beliefs is just the best. That's the point of the show. It ain't about truth. Now that said, we do have to take our first break. When we come back, we got a lot more news. Don't go anywhere. What do you mean? What is that, JR? It's the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special. Coming soon.
How does that
to
work?
Disney Plus. It's a holiday special. I don't know what part of holiday special do you not understand?
It's the Guardians of the Galaxy part. I don't understand.
Well, so. That's a movie, and the movie has actors in it, and those actors are in this.
Put Santa Claus hats on it or something.
There might also be Santa Claus hats, but it looks good anyway. Okay, with that, we got a lot to talk about. We've already, oh my God, it's 10:36. Let's jump into this and we're going to be brief, JR, okay? Let's jump into this.
He has no issue being subpoenaed and answering questions about what happened that day, and he shouldn't.
So that's Alina Haba saying, obviously Donald Trump should testify. He's got no reason to not want to testify. I can't wait to see him testify. And you'll note that she said that on TV. But not all of life takes place when the cameras are rolling. And it turns out that behind the scenes, that's not what his lawyers are actually telling him. One of them spoke to Rolling Stone and said, absolutely effing not on whether he should testify. I really wish I could have said the whole thing. I'm sure that they did to him. Several of them have apparently directly told the ex-president this month that any testimony under oath would be an awful idea. The advisors cautioned Trump. The committee members would mine his testimony for potential perjury charges, particularly given his penchant for lying. I know that they didn't say that directly to him, but I love that they know who he is. And they know there's no way this guy is going to sit there and not lie. And not lie in a way that could result in him going to jail. Anyway, they asked Ty Cobbs, former Trump White House attorney, if they agree that he should watch out for perjury traps, and says that is absolutely true. Trump is uniquely susceptible to that because he is so easily provoked. I love that he doesn't add provoked to do what? To lie viciously and repeatedly and predictably. But I also love the different lives that billionaires get to live than you or I. I don't know if you've ever been asked a tough question that you would have preferred not to have to answer, and you might lie in response to that. Now that just for us would be a social situation. For rich people though, it's a perjury trap. They ask you a question, you lie, and they're the bad guy somehow. I love how that works out for the rich and powerful, JR. You're not bad for lying, they're bad for being so uncouth as to ask you a question that they know you'll lie when you ask.
How dare you? You know what? You guys know I'm trying to cover things up. You know I'm trying to make sure that I skirt by from all of these charges and investigations and potential criminal activity that I've been involved with. How dare you ask and try to find out? I was only the president of the United States. I only hoarded classified information. I only stole from my supporters. That's all that happened. I violently told my people to go and attack the Capitol. That's all. Why are you guys on my back? What's the matter with you? Please, do you know who I am? This is why we set up this entire hierarchy in our country that if you're on the top, you are untouchable. If the police can't touch you, if the FBI can't touch you, if the highest authority figures in the country can't touch you, who the hell are you, Joe Schmo in Alabama, to challenge me? This is the United States, but it's not what we say out loud, it's just how we act. Everything we do, many things that we do versus what we say are complete polar opposites here. But when it comes to, when it comes down to it, it's, wait, you guys do know how this works, right? This is Donald Trump. You don't challenge or ask him anything. You don't catch him in a lie. He's not a regular guy. Is that what we accept? Is that what we want?
You certainly don't expect anything of him. You don't expect honesty or anything like that. I'm going to leave you with one more comment because it really gets to, so why should we discuss something like this? Well, the primary reason is I want to, and I want you to be able to hopefully have an idea ahead of time of how this is going to play out. Is he going to testify? What effect might that have on the midterms, on the actual case, on what people think about January 6th? But there is a secondary reason, and it's just that I really want to make sure that Donald Trump knows that literally no one around him has any respect for him whatsoever. Because here is what one of the sources in his legal team said to the Daily Beast. Or sorry, this is Rolling Stone. It is my hope that we talked him out of it. The former president seemed receptive to our arguments against it, but with Donald Trump, it can be hard to tell sometimes what is actually sunk in or stuck.
Jesus.
They came to him, they're like, buddy, you can't testify. Because you're gonna lie and it's gonna be bad for you. And then they walk out of the room and like, I don't know if he got that. What a sad idiot.
It's the stuff we heard about during his presidency. People never know what he's thinking. The last person in the room is the one he goes with because his thought process is a gerbil.
Yeah, 100%. Don't slight gerbils. I prefer gerbils to most humans at this point, and I won't hear you bad mouthing them.
As soon as I said it, gerbils might have a great memory. I just threw that animal out there.
Slam. I doubt it. I think that their brain is maybe half the size of a raisinette, but I don't know. I'm not a vet, I guess. Anyway, with that said, let's turn to far more serious and darker material. A lot more details have come out following the tragic shooting at a school in St. Louis, including about the killer. But we're gonna start with the victims. Here is a photo of a student, Alexandria Bell. It's only 15 years old. And Jean Kuchku, who is described as, this is a teacher, by the way, was described by a student as, when she saw the shooter, she stepped between the shooter and her students. 61-year-old teacher whose last act was to just try to save the lives of her students. And that is indisputably heroic no matter what. There isn't a person alive who doesn't like to think, to wish that they would do the same thing, but she did it. She just tried to save people's lives. And just very briefly, in this political context where we have so much focus on schools and so much explicit attacks against teachers, we know who teachers are and how much they sacrifice. But this is a reminder of what sometimes they have to sacrifice and willingly sacrifice. She's not the first teacher who has died trying to save the lives of the kids that she was in charge of. She won't be the last because of the decisions our politicians have chosen to make in America. But you know, endless credit to her, such a loss. Both of her and Alexandria, you know, struck down before her life could even really begin. That said, let's turn now to the monster who killed them. Orlando Harris graduated the year before from that same school. He got himself an AR-15 style rifle. He got himself 600 rounds of ammunition, a dozen high capacity magazines. Why would you need those things? Well, to kill a lot of people. Why would it be legal to buy those things? Because nobody seems to care if you want to kill a lot of people. Here's a shot of the gun that he used. Total coincidence, by the way, that he went for an AR-15 style rifle. It's not because they're uniquely great at killing a lot of humans in a short period of time. It's just a coincidence like it is with basically every mass shooter. Anyway, accompanying all of that was this other piece of evidence, a handwritten note that said, I don't have any friends, I don't have any family, I've never had a girlfriend, I've never had a social life, I've been an isolated loner my entire life. This was the perfect storm for a mass shooter. Now that has sort of like the facade of self-analysis, but it's obviously lacking the part where he, you know, knew that this was the perfect storm, but then chose not to kill a bunch of people for some reason, was a loner, but chose not to join a group or a club or meet people. Now look, obviously we want there to be all of the support structures possible. We advocate every day for schools to be places where people are made to feel accepted and loved and all of that. There's also at the same time a little bit of personal responsibility. And if you can do this much self-analysis, you can probably take the next step and not kill a bunch of people who didn't cause these problems for you. Jared, what do you think?
We also like to promote people sometimes when they have these thoughts and how society's come for them, and you know, women are getting all out of pocket. We know the manifesto for many of these folks who, he mentioned one aspect of it, never had a girlfriend, all that stuff. Whatever social maybe issues he has with getting along and fitting in, all those things we write off as just whatever weird kid, ha ha ha. In fact, all the way up to the tops of our political discourse, it's bullying and it's conversations and it's fighting and it's name calling. We see it all the time. So if we think that the leaders of our country are okay doing this stuff, of course, yeah, it's fine if someone else does. That's a separate whole thing here. But let's point out with Alexandria, and here's Jean, that teacher who stepped in front. She did, I think, save some lives. I don't know the exact scenario, but because of that, who knows then what changed, what this guy saw when he started shooting, and maybe something spoke in him because of the heroism that she then exhibited. But also, I say it every time, what was the criminal history again on this guy? None. Until he started shooting at innocent people. So he was a good guy with a gun walking up to the school the entire way, according to the NRA. He had a gun, he had no history with a crime, and then he started shooting people. At that point, he became the bad guy with a gun, right? And then so we need more good guys with guns, and hopefully they don't flip and become bad guys with guns in that same moment too. It's a really volatile and not a very safe situation to go by, that we should base our political discourse and access to guns, to have it based off. Just in case a guy decides to start shooting, let's just go ahead and let it happen. We don't care about it until it happens. That's the way we run these things. We don't prevent crime. We just respond to it and say, I'm going to do something, vote for me. They need more of this.
Yeah. And basically all those people will turn around and say, guys like this should still be able to go out and buy these rifles. We should not stop that from happening.
100%.
Okay, we're going to take our last break of the hour. When we come back, we're going to have a little bit of fun though after this. Oh geez, these hours pass by so fast. Let's jump into this. According to Marjorie Greene, she has been swatted again. And again, and again, and again, and again, and again. 6 times apparently, actually. She says she was swatted for the 6th time just last night. This would be as of Tuesday night, I think, maybe Monday night. So swatting is a very serious crime. The caller wants to have their victim murdered by police, but it is also a giant abuse of police resources and time, which is another reason it is a serious crime. God bless my local police. Well, first of all, I'm glad to see her saying God bless my local police. Presumably the local police aren't standing between her and a democracy she wants to overthrow. And so she is not beset by a bloodlust and wants to kill them with her bare hands. So that's good news. I also, by the way, agree with her on all of her other points. It is a giant abuse and waste of police resources. It is a very serious crime. Nobody should be swatting anyone, including people that we disagree with, as much as we're physically capable of disagreeing with anyone or anything. Don't swat Marjorie Greene, don't swat anyone. I will add though, that she has now had an experience of this. She knows how bad it can be, how terrifying it can be. She is still technically a congressperson. Why not use this to raise swatting as an issue nationally, to actually take this terrible thing that's happening to you and that hopefully should stop, and turn it into something productive and positive, where you try to get a law passed that makes it less likely for this to happen, that makes it so that there might be some sort of unified list of phone numbers where people who are being routinely swatted, including political streamers, can be protected from this routinely happening to them again and again. The onus is not on her to do this, but just like her talking about how solitary confinement is bad when it happens to the January 6th people, you have an opportunity to show that you don't just care about yourself or someone who agrees with you, that you actually see an injustice and will work to correct it. This is an amazing opportunity for that, Marjorie Greene. We'll see if she takes it. Yeah, what do you think?
She can't take it because it's not about her. As you, I think you pointed out pretty clearly there, the whole idea is that it's about her. You said take it nationally. Think about other people that this happens to. That will require her to get outside of her own brain and not think this is all about her or about her political aspirations. Continuously about her. You know what? There's a problem with people calling the cops on folks that aren't doing anything. Many times they're black folks and they go, let's just call the cops on them. And then when that comes, does she complain about their wasted resources? Does she care about the fact that cops come up many times, shoot these folks without asking any questions and believe the other person's story and arrest people, many times children? Does she care about any of that stuff when she's talking about how there's a problem? She cares about it when it's her problem. Yes, and I agree. 100%. Stop swatting Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Those Karen calls are effectively swatting. You know, it's in public, I guess, but it's just as bad, just as dangerous.
And they say it openly anyway. Half the time. They go, I'm going to get the cops here and they're going to do this and that to you. They know it. Sorry.
Exactly. Let's jump into our last topic of the hour. Marjorie Greene took part in a call-in show called Night Talk on North Georgia's UCTV. And she was asked some tough questions. We'll see how she responded to one about abortion.
If a child, if the 10-year-old child that was raped, what about?
Then I think we should put the rapist, a child abuser.
Be punished. The child can't have anything done to her without the government going after them, finding them, and all that stuff—that's not right.
A child abuser and a rapist should be put to death if they are doing that to a 10-year-old child. Number one, I think that should be our focus. That is a very rare, rare, rare occasion. So that should not be the entire premise of the argument on abortion. Again, ma'am, I know you say it's your body, your choice, but I don't think you're having any children anytime soon. I think we need to focus on the future of America, and that's our children.
Okay, so that's absolutely disgusting, especially her apparently hearing in the woman's voice that she's older and thus saying you shouldn't, effectively saying you shouldn't be opining on this because you're old, you won't be having kids, so you don't get to have a say over what happens to your body. And then of course there's the dodge of, well, we'll put that guy to death and that should be our focus. Forget the victim, let's not worry about them. And also, oh, that might be rare, so let's not focus on it. She's, of course, one of many Republicans that will tell you that Democrats want to have abortion after birth, which is beyond rare. It doesn't exist, but they want that to be the focus of the conversation. Importantly, though, to the extent that she has an ideology, it is that this is a different human body, and thus you're not allowed to end it. Now, she's missing the point that consent matters. In these examples, the woman did not consent to be responsible for this body. And there's the classic hypotheticals. What if you woke up in a hospital with a person strapped to your body, and your body operating as life support for them? Are you required to allow them to use your body to stay alive? I mean, it is another life on the line. And obviously you're not. Consent actually matters to most people, not to Marjorie Greene. JR, what do you think?
Well, this is one of the things, again, it's just about her, but when she's talking about this 10-year-old and maybe the victim, a child, since we're protecting them, it's a victim of a rapist and everything. Kill him, kill him, kill him. They're all about the consequences for these criminals, but they're not about trying to prevent it. It's an ongoing thing over and over again. If we just talk about her getting swatted, do you think she's gonna, think her stance is, let's just wait for maybe the, she keeps saying the police would come and kill her and swatting. You know, it's okay, let's not do anything until I get killed, then go after the cops that killed me, or then go after the person who swatted me. Do you think that's her stance? I think she wants to stop it beforehand.
I doubt it, 100%. And look, she's very clear there. She does not see there to be exceptions. It's murder, okay? So just understand, if you allow people like her to get into power, whether her as a representative or maybe the vice president someday, this is their actual position. The advantage that Marjorie Greene has over a lot of these Republican politicians is she will be honest about what she thinks, and it's horrific. Anyway, she eventually fled from the show after being asked about January 6th. They just came back from break. She was done. That was it. See ya. Bye bye. She's gone. The hosts seemed bewildered by what had happened. And I sort of get, you should have known something weird was going to happen when you had her on the show.
Profiles and courage.
Anyway, yeah, profiles and courage. That's all the time we have for this hour. Thank you to those watching on the linear platforms, listening to the podcast. There's a lot more to come in the aftermath, though, on Twitch, YouTube, and other platforms. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.